that's great for a certain, you know, group of people, but that's not necessarily resonating with everyone. And that was important to us because we could understand those things and we were drawn to it. But a lot of the people that we knew could benefit from it just didn't vibe with them. And as we started to think about what we wanted Rich and Regular to be, one of the early lessons that we learned was the importance of storytelling. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we're talking to Josh Ellis, editor-in-chief of Success.
How are you, Josh?
I'm so great. Excited to be here. And your podcast is going to be such a hit that I'm thrilled to be. I'm going to be like a piece of trivia one day. Who was on the first episode? It was me.
Maybe you'll be an NFT.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, we're going to be able to sell this.
I mean, I'm sure that there's an episode coming up about those. I hope you've got it in the forecast already.
Absolutely. There's tons and tons of topics. We're really, really excited. And it's such an honor and a privilege to be working with you guys. We've been spending the last couple of weeks really thinking about this podcast and some of the topics that we want to cover. And we're just so excited to share with our community and the broader Success Achievers community. It's going to be amazing.
Well, I know that you guys are bringing a devoted audience who love the stuff that you've done on your blog and through Money on the Table, your YouTube series. But, you know, hopefully some of our audience are here too, and they're getting to know you. So let's go back before those 2 weeks. I want to hear your story.
Well, I tend to defer to Kirsten because she tells the more illustrative version of our story.
Now it's all this pressure. So we actually met at work. Julian and I are married and we've been married about 6 years, but we met at work close to a decade ago and started dating
What were you doing then? What work?
We were both working for a large hotel company. So we were in the travel industry and we were both in marketing roles. So our job was really to help hotel owners sell vacations and put, you know, people in rooms. That sounds not very fun, but it was a really fun job and industry.
Yeah. And it was a lot of travel at the time. We were spending, and she was actually traveling a bit more than I was, but I would say anywhere from like 50 to maybe 60% of our time on the road. And so I spent a lot more time in the US, but she was actually fortunate to travel abroad a couple of times. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. You guys were living in Atlanta then?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's still home. Okay. Sorry to interrupt the love story. Continue.
Well, it was hot and heavy, you know, pretty quickly. And because we were traveling so often and because we both loved being on the road, we decided to take a vacation fairly quickly, about 3 months after we had started dating. And that vacation actually led to our first conversation about money, which was actually our first argument about money. So what had happened was Julian was far more frugal and financially responsible than I was at this stage in life. I was still a party girl, brunching it up on the weekends, really spending every dollar I made and then some. And so when we went on this vacation, we agreed to split the cost, but I put my half on credit cards and Julian was planning to pay cash for his, or I think you paid cash for yours.
Yes.
Okay. So we get back and you know how after you take a vacation, you kind of need a vacation from the vacation. Like I wanted to jump right back into dating, going out, eating, drinking, having a good time. And Julian was ready to buckle down and actually like, you know, recoup what he had just spent on vacation, like actually eat peanut butter sandwiches and like, you know, not spend so much money. And so that's when we got in our first argument because he asked me, how was I paying for the vacation if I wanted to keep going? And I told him I was putting it on a credit card and I had no plans to pay off the vacation. It's just on the credit card with everything else that's on my credit card. And he told me that if he had known I had credit card debt, he would not have dated me. And so that led to a very prompt breakup. And that was the end of our love story for a little while.
Yeah. So this is not a relationship podcast, clearly. We're not experts in that field. And obviously what I said was harmful. And then I regret what I said. But even still, I'm grateful that we were able to get over that hump, because it forced us to have a conversation about money very, very early on in our relationship. We've met since then a lot of couples, and you learn pretty quickly that that's uncommon. Most people kind of punt that conversation, and as a result, it ends up becoming something that actually creates some problems further on down the road. Pretty much when you're getting ready to make a big financial decision is like the first time that you actually start exploring your own story or your partner's story about money. And so this argument really led to a lot of deep emotional work for us, but also a lot of educational work, because we learned a lot about each other, but we also learned a lot about money and investing and budgeting in the process. And so pretty much in the process of getting back together, we were also starting to map out the financial life that we wanted for each other. We realized that, hey, you know, there were a couple of things that we just did not want. We didn't want to be in debt, because we realized the role that debt was actually playing a negative role in our lives. It would play a negative role in our ability to be the kind of parents that we wanted to be, or even the better children to the parents that we had. And so long story short, over the next 5 years, we paid off about $200,000 in 5 years. We invested in real estate. We, at our peak, started saving and investing about 70% of our income, and it really put us on the path to financial independence. And here we are, right? We are at a point, you know, what was that? Almost eight years later, something like that. Having learned a ton of lessons, having shared a ton of lessons along the way on our blog and through other forms of media. And it's been a really wild and fun ride.
And that was the last argument you guys ever had about money. You were perfectly synced after that. It's never been a problem since, right?
Yeah, sure. You know, we've had disagreements, right? But that's also one of the really important lessons, you know, and we write about that in our book. Which, you know, we can talk about later. But, you know, as you grow and, you know, start to change, you know, your perspective on things, you actually should be expecting conflict. I think more often than not, people are thinking that the marker of success in relationships is avoidance of arguments. And actually, we've learned to kind of embrace them, right? They don't necessarily need to be hostile, you know, but you can have a disagreement, and you should have disagreements, because you're two completely different people, right? You didn't, you know, and even if you did grow up together, you know, we're not high school sweethearts or anything like that, but you should anticipate and expect to have conflicts. And money is one of those things that is just a fertile ground for conflict. But if we're evidence of anything, it's that it can also be a really great source of some remarkable breakthroughs.
Well, I think that, you know, everybody watching this, to some listening to this, to some degree or another, is going to identify with one of you, or, and maybe at different times, both of you in your approach to that first trip. Like, some people are like Julian, who they've got the Dave Ramsey envelope system and don't spend it unless you have it. And then there's some people like Kirsten who are like, I want to live my life and not be stressed about this. So did you guys like meld into one common understanding, or do you still have both beginning states that still stick with you in some ways?
Yeah, we definitely did not meld into one type of person. I'm still very much YOLO, and he is still very much on the safer side of things. But we have taught each other quite a bit. I've taught him how to spend money on the things that he values. And so he's made some strides there and got a new car for the first time that he liked. Well, new to him, a new to him car, a car that he enjoys, and has invested in a deep freezer and gym memberships and the things that matter to him. And I've learned to pull back and not be so impulsive. And so when I do catch myself spending money on a bright gold pineapple shaped basket because it was on sale at Crate and Barrel and I don't use it, I return it. Or, you know, I can ask myself certain questions to make sure that the money that I'm spending reflects the values that I have. So we're still very much two different types of people in terms of how we think about our money, but we've learned to communicate and give each other grace and room to be ourselves.
And how about you, Julian? I mean, do you feel like, you know, you've become maybe not, I don't want to call you cheap from at the beginning, but like frugality is different than being cheap, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's you know, it's almost like purposeful spending, right? Over frugality. Frugality, you know, is just not a very sexy word. but I would say I was cheap. Yeah, cheap was exactly who I was. And I certainly have my moments. And to Kirsten's point, though, you know, now I have much more. First of all, we have the flexibility to sort of spend on the things that we enjoy, and we certainly take advantage of that. But it's really just about recognizing that, you know, you have to pay attention to the big things. And for us, it's paying attention to income instead of like counting pennies and clipping coupons. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. But given our goals, we certainly understand that it's much more important for us to focus on our investment approach, to focus on our business, and to focus on income. And so it's been interesting. We've both sort of grown. And even just the other day or the other night, we were thinking about just sort of projecting into the future. And at this point, it's almost impossible to think about what the future holds. But we were optimistic, right? And that was really all that matters. So it was like, I don't know where we'll be. And I can't even say certainly that we'll be in the United States, but we are grateful that we have those options and we can say, you know what, I can envision us spending time over here or, you know, going to another country or spending the summers, you know, in South America or something like that. So it's been an interesting ride because 10 years ago, even before I met Kirsten, that certainly would not have been on the radar for me, but it just kind of goes to show what time and really kind of paying attention to your money can sort of make available to you in your life.
Well, let's talk then about the income. I mean, at some point you guys did decide to put your, I assume, you know, well-paying marketing jobs aside and go dive into what was a gamble on yourselves to launch Rich and Regular.
Yeah. Julian left first.
I jumped ship in 2018, summer of 2018.
And we had already been living on less than one income. So that's one of the things that we had started early in our marriage. And so he was able to do that. In addition to having the investments and the decisions that we made, you know, while we were dating and engaged and early in our marriage, he was able to do that with very little financial repercussions for us, which was part of what propelled him to jump quickly. But I followed him, gosh, I left February 2020. So about a year and a half later, it was my turn, and that was a lot scarier. But when I thought about, you know, when I asked myself a different set of questions and thought about what we could gain from that leap, it became a no-brainer for me. I knew I could be a better wife, mom, sister, friend, if I spent just as much time investing in myself and in the things that bring infinite value to my life versus giving my hours away every week at a job that, you know, has minimal upside or limited upside.
And were there goals that you had in mind for, you know, the business initially? And how did you kind of work to reach those income goals?
You know, that's been one of the most interesting parts of this. And we were reflecting on this just the other day as well, as we were, you know, we were outsiders looking in as we were sort of paying attention to the personal finance landscape and just feeling like there was something missing, right? There's this term in marketing called the sea of sameness. And you know, that's kind of how we felt. It sort of felt like everyone was talking about the same things in the same way, and they all kind of looked and sounded the same. And we felt like, you know what, that's great for a certain, you know, group of people, but that's not necessarily resonating with everyone. And that was important to us because we could understand those things and we were drawn to it. But a lot of the people that we knew could benefit from it, it just didn't vibe with them. And so we wanted to make sure that we could do something about that and see if we can add a little flavor, make it a little bit more fun, a little more conversational. And as we started to think about what we wanted Rich and Regular to be, one of the early lessons that we learned was the importance of storytelling and how stories have a way of breaking through much more than, let's say, stats. I think another way of thinking about that is particularly when you think about money, you know, there's a general consensus that financial illiteracy is at the root of most people's problem, but that just wasn't our experience. A lot of the people that we knew were some of the smartest people we've ever met. They understood how money worked. They had high incomes. They may have even had dual incomes with their partners, right? But they just didn't quite seem to be making progress in terms of achieving their financial goals. And we realized that was actually a really interesting challenge for us. It was like, well, how do we reach those people? How do we make these kinds of lessons and this information a little bit more real for them? And that's what we realized, that it made a little bit more sense, actually a lot more sense, to aim for the heart instead of the head. And so stop trying to motivate people by showing them what their returns might be after 30 years and start talking to them more about the sort of life they could have, the husband or the wife they could be, the son, the sort of impact that they could have on their community if they actually focus on building a rich life, right? That's the reason why I think a lot of the people that follow us are interested in. It's not just because they want to get rich and sit on a beach sipping pina coladas and Mai Tais. I think that's important. And we look forward to doing that too. But more importantly, we look forward to creating really, really great memories with our son and creating a new set of memories, you know, after 10 years of marriage, 20 years of marriage. And those are the things that we learned. And those are the stories that we just started to use as a lever to help inspire people to make better financial decisions.
You've mentioned vacations and pina coladas and Mai Tais. I know that there was a South Africa trip, so I'm curious. You, like me, you guys are millennials, so we know that experiences, not things, are worth splurging on. What are some of the other trips that you guys have invested in?
South Africa was by far our biggest investment because it was our honeymoon, and it was the first time that we weren't like points hacking or travel hacking, like using up all the points we had earned through business travel to get a 6 a.m. flight and the hotel room next to the elevator. We truly splurged and upgraded ourselves and really spoiled ourselves during that trip. And it was life changing. Mm-hmm. It was the trip that solidified our goal for financial freedom. Since then, we've been to Hawaii, Peru, Italy,
Thailand,
Aruba. Yeah, Jamaica. We go to Jamaica. We try to go to Jamaica once a year. That's where Julian's family is from. But we didn't get to go last year, obviously, because of the lockdowns. But looking forward to going back to the beach there. We haven't really taken a long haul international trip since our son was born. He's turning 4 in a couple of weeks. So we're looking forward to kind of flight training him this year and taking some longer flights so we can get his mileage up and go back traveling internationally. We miss seeing new cultures and new places and new foods.
Yeah, everybody's sort of had this experience since the pandemic started of whether you'd like to save up for travel or this or that. I mean, everything's been affected in some way. And so a lot of us have found ourselves, if we were lucky enough to continue to have incomes, with money that we would otherwise spend. I'm curious what you guys have done with, you know, that travel budget this past year, if you've invested it or how did you approach that question?
Yeah, so I don't know that we could have been any more fortunate. We liquidated our last rental property a few days before the pandemic was announced. The closing that we had on that property, on the sale of that property, was the first one that the closing attorney had had since things were starting to get dicey and people weren't really sure. And I just remember her sitting on the other end of this really long boardroom. But all that to say, when we were done, we were flush with cash, you know, in the middle or at the beginning of a shutdown, right? And so we had plenty of runway to just sort of hold on. Our original plan was to invest that money and to continue to grow our business. But as things started to dry up, we were really fortunate to have plenty of cash on hand. And I think that's one of the first rules that we realized we had to bend, you know, because normally we wouldn't hold on to nearly as much cash. But during that time, it was actually one of the best decisions that we'd ever made. Now, in a perfect world, we would have invested that money because, you know, I don't know that anyone could have predicted, you know, that a year ago, the stock market would be where it is today. I'm sure there's someone out there saying that they did predict it or could have, but I would like to think that was pretty impossible to predict. But yeah, it's been an incredible, incredibly enlightening journey. And by journey, I mean this journey at home, you know, the idea of just being still and watching, you know, industries and entrepreneurs and businesses evolve and families just evolve as we sort of get used to this new sort of living, a way of living. But yeah, there's certainly a financial lens to that. And it's been really life-changing for sure.
So before I took the side road on vacations, because I was curious about that as a eager traveler who, like you guys, can't wait to get back on the road, we were starting to get at really what financial independence is about for you, for me, for the audience. Like, I think that one of the conversations that we were having with you guys is we're starting to, you know, begin to, you know, talk about what this partnership could be like. Is like, you know, our brand, the people don't read Success or come to our website or visit the Success Achievers community because they think that they're going to get all the way to have a private jet and like do anything and eat caviar for every meal. Like, they just want to spend more time with their family and be able to you know, take a 3-day weekend whenever, right? And get away with it and not have to stress. And so, when you talk to most people, is that what they view as financial independence?
Yeah. I think most people are looking to be what we call rich and regular. It's sort of a play on rich and famous. We don't look to be removed from the inconveniences of everyday life. Like, we still enjoy being able to, you know, go to Target and, well, I still enjoy being able to go to Target. And, you know, that's one thing that the pandemic revealed is you start to miss those little inconveniences. It's like, man, what I wouldn't kill for to wait in line and complain about how long it's taking to be seated at this restaurant. Like, please, somebody come spill a drink on me in the middle of, in the middle of a crowded plaza. But yeah, I think what most people would define that as is comfortable. And if we could have named our blog comfortable.com without any confusion, we probably would have. But like, I think what people want is options. So much of the way that our world is set up today, you're kind of locked into these timelines and your week is like squeezed into Monday through Friday, you know, 6:30 to 8 p.m. if you've got kids, and maybe a little bit later if you don't. But like, what financial independence gives us is just that it opens that up a lot more. If we decide that we want to take a vacation Tuesday through Friday, we can do that because we own our time. And that changes the way that you interact with the world. It changes the way you interact with your calendar and all the things on your to-do list. It changes the approach that you take with your marriage. And you can really start to understand what a lot of self-help and personal development sort of gurus have been saying when they say it's all small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff. And the four agreements, you really start to internalize that because you're not faced with trying to squeeze in all of that wisdom into the 2 hours you have before your commute and the 3 hours you have when you get off before bedtime, or the weekends where you've got all the other things that you've got to do for your house. So it's been life-changing, and our goal is to make it as accessible to as many people as possible.
If I can add one thing, you know, it also, and by it I mean financial independence, it also gives you an opportunity to be a bit more creative and flexible in terms of the opportunities you have to earn income, right? It's a dream come true for us to be able to do what we love and to actually earn money from doing that, right? Like most people, I'd like to think like that's all they want to do. If they could just play video games or play, you know, their favorite sport, for us, that's talk about money. That's help teach and inspire people about money. And so this is really a dream come true. And that's something that we owe to all of the work that we've done over the years to get out of debt, to invest at a high rate so that we weren't locked into a job or any sort of thing that required us to be there in exchange for money. And I like to think that that's the sort of flexibility that a lot of people are looking for.
So I've had the pleasure of getting to be the first to see your first couple of columns for the magazine. People who are visiting achievers.success.com are getting to see how you interact with the audience there. And there's courses coming up from you guys there. But let's talk about the podcast. I am an NFT. This is the first episode, but there's many, many more to come. What can people expect in the coming, you know, weeks and months and years from you guys here on the Rich and Regular podcast?
I think first and foremost is fun. We love math. But when I'm listening to podcasts, I don't necessarily want to be taking notes or doing calculations. And so our mission is to inspire better conversations about money. So you'll hear us having conversations about money every week where we explore what is usually an incredibly boring subject matter as two people who are just curious to try and understand why in a world where Google is free and there's been budgeting advice and financial experts that have existed for, you know, 50, 60 years, why more people aren't taking advantage of the advice that's out there? What is the biggest deterrent? Is it income? Is it mindset? Is it family? Is it psychology? Is it fear? We really want to get into all of that stuff and just kind of talk about it and inspire other people to have the conversations that they may be avoiding.
There's definitely people out there who think that if they just don't think about money, then the problem doesn't exist, right? You guys are here to fight that.
Yes. Because I was that person. I was that person for 27 years until I wasn't. And it's literally a decision that you can make, you know, within a day. It's a life-changing decision. And we want to encourage people to make it.
One of the things that I really believe about podcasting is you know, people do it wrong more often than not because most shows are built around the guests that come on and the host just, you know, asks the guests questions and lets them do all the work. But, you know, it's fine to have guests and have great conversations with them. But more than anything, people listen for the hosts. And so just to spill the beans, I mean, it's just going to be the two of you most more often than not.
Yeah, which, you know, for us is pretty cool because we talk to each other every day. Obviously, there'll be a lot more thought work and research that goes into making sure that we present lessons and insights that listeners can benefit from. And I think every now and then, you know, which is one of the things that we're actually also excited about the podcast. Every now and then, we're going to bring on a couple people. I know we discussed having other members of the editorial board on there, and they're just a bunch of rock stars that we're so impressed by. And we look forward to learning from them and introducing our audience to them and vice versa as well. So, but yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. You know, we've been talking to each other for nonstop for the last 8 years. I know you can't see her face right now, but she loves talking to me and, you know, you can't really blame her. And so now we finally get to share that with the rest of the world. It's pretty cool.
Well, I'm really looking forward to just listening to you guys because you've got such an evolved way of talking about it. And you know, my wife and I, I think we do better than most people in the way that we communicate about money, but there's a lot to learn, you know, I have the sense that you guys, to go back to South Africa, and I'd love to hear more about that before you kick me out and move on with your day, that South Africa trip and the realizations that you had. But it, as I understand it from reading your first column in the magazine, it was really just a decision there to to really become educated about all this stuff so that it didn't stress you and overcome you?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we think about that moment, that trip pretty regularly. We had actually told ourselves that we were going to come back in 2020 to sort of relive that moment. We obviously weren't able to do that because of the pandemic. But I like to think that most people, particularly couples, kind of have that moment. You know, I don't know that we mentioned this, but that trip to South Africa was actually our honeymoon. Right. And so we were there. And during that moment, we just came to so many realizations about work and the trajectory that we were on. And as much as we were celebrating our union, in some way, we were also kind of mourning, you know, the death of an old ambition, this idea or this commitment to long careers. At that moment, we realized, actually, I don't know that I want to do that anymore, because we were sitting there thinking, like, when could we come back? How do you come back when you have a kid? That's an 18-hour flight from Atlanta to Johannesburg. And so, you know, as we started thinking about that, and it was like, wow, like, if you want to come back, you've got to figure out a plan to get there. And I don't mean just coming up with the cash. More importantly, it's like, how do you find the time and the capacity to do that? And so that was really the beginning for us. And again, I think a lot of people have those moments, whether it's their honeymoon or whether it's a frustrating day or period at work, where they just really start to think about, oh my gosh, I don't know if I've got another 30 years in the tank. You know what I mean? Like, that for a lot of people is a thing to say, you know what? If nothing else, that is the reason why I need to prioritize putting money and thinking about money differently at the center of my life, and not kick that can down the road or avoid the conversation. Because as soon as you unlock that, if our life and experience and journey has been any lesson, as soon as you unlock that, I mean, that's when magical things start to happen. So it's been a great journey. And as I said, we're optimistic about the future, and we're looking forward to sharing as much as we can with listeners and the Success Achievers community.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. Thrilled to have you as part of the team, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, man. It's been great. And this is certainly not the last conversation that we'll have, but we look forward to having plenty more and, you know, getting to know everyone else at Success.